Good morning. If you'd like to turn in your Bibles to Matthew chapter 8, Matthew chapter 8. If you are visiting with us this morning, we are very glad to have you here. I hope you will come back and see us again sometime. We're on the edge of spring break for a lot of us this week. I've already had a few people ask if we have decided where we're going for our spring break trip. And the answer is no, we have not yet decided where we're going. We have a rough idea, but we'll see how the week goes. I know Tuesday morning I think we will get in our car and go somewhere, and we'll see where that is. Not terribly far away, I'm assuming, but we'll go somewhere. Matthew chapter 8. Gospels are an interesting thing. I think. We have these four accounts of the things that go on in the life of Jesus and the life of the disciples, and they come from different angles at how they look at things, and sometimes they emphasize some things over others. Sometimes they place different order on things than others, and we're not quite sure what to make of that. For whatever reason, this story that we're going to look at today is in three of the Gospels. You'll find it in Matthew, Mark, and in Luke. In different locations in those Gospels and with some different points of the story emphasized, but in all three. And I have always thought to myself that if I find something in three or four of the four Gospels, then there must be some more emphasis there. There must be some really true importance to this story that makes it worth looking at. This story we look at this morning is one of the stories that people who did form criticism and redaction criticism and all these things in Scripture, where they look at the literary side of things and try to figure things out, this is one of those that they would go to very early on and find the things that are different and the things that are similar in each of the accounts that we find in the Gospels. In Matthew's account in particular, you find it in a weird spot because Matthew has not been called as a disciple yet in his account. Now, most of the historians will feel like that Matthew was actually called much earlier than this, and Matthew puts his calling where he does in his gospel for some other reason to make a point. Where we find this story, though, in Matthew's gospel is right after a story we will read about where Jesus is talking to people about following him. And the cost of that and what all is involved and the things that you put aside, the things that you don't do about following him, and then they find themselves on this boat. I am not a deep water kind of guy. I can remember growing up, this family lived two houses down from us. They were very much into deep sea fishing. The dad was a police officer there in Mobile, Alabama. His kids were all about being on the water. They loved being out there. And one time they invited me to go out deep sea fishing with them. And I thought, on the one hand, this sounds like a fun thing to get invited to do. On the other hand, I'm absolutely terrified of the idea of going out there. Being that far from shore, being that unsure of things, I just wasn't comfortable around the water. And we find the disciples here in an occasion where they're going to be out on the water. Now, something we know about them is a lot of them are very comfortable out on the water because they're fishermen. This is what they do. And if they're not comfortable, that's not a great livelihood to have chosen, I guess. But we assume because of what they do that they're pretty comfortable out there. Beginning of verse 23 of Matthew chapter 8, it says, he got into the boat and his disciples followed him. And again, we've just finished this part earlier on that we're not going to look at where he has said, this is how I want you to follow. And so he asks them basically, come follow me onto this boat. And so they do. So they start out well. They got into the boat, and the disciples followed him. Suddenly, a furious storm came up on the lake so that the waves swept over the boat. Now, if you've ever been over to the Oregon coast, which I'm assuming most of you have at this point, we love the coast. That has not become a joke with us now. I know several people have mentioned to us that even though we don't know where we're going, somehow the coast will probably work its way into that because we like going over there. And what we have found on the coast almost every time we have gone has been perfect weather, which is hysterical if you know the Oregon coast, because it's not like that. And so every time we go over there, and it's just pristine, and it's calm, and the blue waters, and the sky is pretty blue, and we'll come back with pictures of it, and people will say, how are you doing this? Where are you going? This is not what it's supposed to be like. Until one time I finally went over and saw what it's actually supposed to be like. And I went, and it was incredibly windy. And the waves that were crashing in, each wave seemed bigger than the one before it, and I saw what it was to see the power of the storm over there. It's a very different thing than when you were on land. And I don't know how many of you have been around storms. My family will make fun of me a little bit because storms scare me quite a bit. I am not comfortable in a storm. Lightning, although I'm fascinated by it, I want it to stay far, far away from where I'm at. And the thought of being caught out in this lake in a storm, I feel where the disciples are coming from in their attitude toward this, because I would be terrified to be out there. Suddenly, this storm comes up. Now, I don't know a lot about the Sea of Galilee. I've not been there. I just know things that I've read. And apparently, this sea is known for having a storm that will come out of nowhere. Something about the geographic location of it, something about where it is in relation to sea level and the terrain that's around it, these storms will come out of nowhere. And if a storm comes out of nowhere today and you're out in a boat, you have this great thing called a motor, for the most part, and you can get out of there. But for the disciples, as they're out there on this boat and stuck in this storm, a fear begins to develop. Now, there are different ways we can look at this story. We can take it as just on its face value of a great moment of miracle that Jesus does. We can see his power over nature, and that is definitely a part of the story. But for us, what does this story mean? And I think the place that we have to begin is there are going to be storms. Now, the thing about storms is they come in different ways. Where I grew up on the coast, we had hurricanes. And the thing about hurricanes was, and it's a foreign thing to most of you who have not been there, hurricanes were something that you tracked. Now, before internet and before many cable stations and all that stuff, we had four channels with one of those giant dial things that you turn that move your antenna around. I was the remote control. I would go up and turn that thing if somebody wanted a different channel. We would follow the storms as they would come, and at the supermarket, we would go, and they had bags, amazingly, we would go, and they would bag our groceries, and down at the end of the lane where the groceries were the hurricane tracking maps. And we would pick these up, and they would be stuck to the refrigerator at the house, and on the nightly news, because that was all the news that we had at 6 and at 10, the weather guy would come on, and he would tell us the coordinates of the storm that was coming our way. And we would go get our hurricane tracking map, and we would put a little dot there where the storm was. And then the next night, we put a little dot where the storm was, and gradually you would see a track of what this hurricane was doing. And as it got closer and closer to the Gulf Coast, we would prepare if it was coming our direction. Now, sometimes it would seem like it was going further away from you, and you would not think much of it. Other times it would take a turn at the last minute that you were not expecting. But you would begin to prepare for this storm to come your way. Now, where I just moved from in Arkansas, our storms there were tornadoes. One of my favorite things about Oregon is those are in Arkansas and they're not here as much. Tornadoes are very different than the hurricane. Now, the system is basically the same. It's rotating winds around a center. But the tornadoes come quickly. Now, they will come on, and the weather people, you can see them get excited, and their tone changes, and they will tell you that there's a chance for tornadoes today, but they couldn't tell you exactly where there's going to be. And if you got a tornado tracking map, you could not track it fast enough to do any good. And within a short period of time, you find yourself in the midst of it. My friend Nathan that came and spoke to us a few months ago told us about tornadoes and what the terror of that is like. There are different kinds of storms that come along in life. Some of them are ones that we can prepare for. Some of them are ones that come unexpectedly. But yet, the undeniable truth here is there are going to be storms. It is not all going to be smooth sailing. It is not all going to be exactly the way that we mapped it out. There are going to be storms. And then in chapter 8 and verse 24, we find Jesus is sleeping. Now, an interesting thing about the Gospels here, too, do you want to know how many times in Scripture that it mentions Jesus sleeping? Right here. This is it. Now, we know he had to have slept. He was a man, and that's something that you need pretty frequently. But the only time in Scripture it mentions Jesus sleeping is in this story. Now, this tells you any number of things. Someone in here will be asleep before I'm done. I guarantee it. And I'll let you in on a little secret. I know. I'm not blind just because I can see you. And I try not to take it personally. I assume it was a long night yesterday. This is fascinating. You'll listen to it again later. But someone will fall asleep. Some of us fall asleep easily. I wish I could get on an airplane and fall asleep. I can't for two reasons. One, I'm terrified. Two, I know I'm going to snore, and I don't want to embarrass my wife. So I don't fall asleep on the plane. Now, we have different places we can sleep. Some of us more easy than others. But for me, the place that I don't think of sleeping is in the midst of this storm out on the lake. I took a train trip, I've mentioned to you guys before, from Little Rock to L.A. a few years ago. 55 hours on Amtrak. Some of you think that sounds awful. Some of you think that sounds glorious. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. When I got to San Antonio, I had the option of I could either buy a ticket that would take me through San Antonio, staying in the same train car, so I could sleep the night while the train stayed there, and they waited for a train to come from New Orleans that would connect to that train, and then the whole train would go on to L.A., or I could get a hotel room there in San Antonio. And I thought, I'll just stay on the train. This will be easier. And I remember waking up at about 3 in the morning as they were bringing the two trains together, because you could feel all of that, and thinking to myself, maybe the hotel room wouldn't have been a bad idea. I don't sleep through a lot of giant movement. Now, my wife will tell you I sleep through pretty much everything else. But when there's movement like that, it's not something I could sleep through. And yet Jesus finds himself here sleeping. And so can we take anything from the fact that he's sleeping? I see in Jesus calm within a storm. Now, if we want to take this into the idea of the storms of life, there are people who deal with those storms better than others. There are some of us, when the storm comes our way and something unexpected knocks us off our feet, we are frazzled, we are frightened, we are frustrated, we're other FR words, that we don't know what to do with that. We don't know how to react, we're taken away from our plan, and then there are others of us who just run with it and go. There are those of us who, when an actual storm comes along, don't blink an eye and you're just used to it. And there are some who are frightened by it. And here in Jesus, we see calm within the storm, which is something that's a frequent idea throughout the Gospels, which is Jesus, as you run into him in these stories, seems to know something that other people don't know. And I don't know about you, but I like being around the person that knows something that other people don't know. I like being around the person who, in the midst of difficulties, seems to be okay going through that, because I want to learn more about who that person is. And again, in the context here of Jesus saying, follow me. It's not just about I need people to follow along, but there's something I want to show you about life. There's something I want to show you about eternity. And Jesus says, follow me, and they do. And then they find him asleep. And so the disciples went and woke him, saying, Lord, save us. We're going to drown. If you were in the middle of a storm, it is sometimes hard to see anything other than that storm. The one stormy day I saw on the coast when I went over there, Nathan's class was on a field trip to the aquarium in Newport. And I remember standing in the gift shop of the aquarium in Newport, watching fifth graders mill around in there, and the nervous guy behind the cash register trying to make sure everything was okay and all that. And what I found myself doing was staring out the window at the Newport Bay Bridge. Because I was thinking to myself, I'm about to have to cross that. And I was looking at the wind, and I was looking at how hard it was raining, and I was thinking about my car, and I was also thinking about the school bus that's going to have to cross that. I have driven a bus in wind. It's a fun experience. It's like a sailboat on wheels sometimes. And they're not designed to go sideways, and yet they have a way of doing that. And I was running through all these scenarios in my head, because all I can see out there is the wind and the rain. I'm not enjoying this as much as the fifth graders running around the gift shop. Some of us get too focused in on the storm. Now, you can go to the opposite end of that and not notice the storm altogether and seem oblivious to life, but sometimes we get too focused in on the storm. Do we really think God can't handle this? I know that's not what we're trying to say, but is that not what we convey to the world around us when we get so focused in and frightened by the storm? And the disciples, they see him asleep, and they think to themselves, how can he sleep through this? Does he not see the danger that we're in? And they come to him and they say, save us, save us. The way Mark puts it in chapter 4 is Jesus was in the stern sleeping on a cushion, which, by the way, tells me that this is intentional. he has gone down here to sleep. He's gone down here to relax, to get away from whatever's going on. He's in the stern sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" Now, there's a little bit of a difference between "save me" and "do you not care?" And I don't know if this is a case of some disciples saying one thing and some saying the other thing, but some of them question the idea of does he even care? When the storms come along in our own lives, does not mean that God does not care about us. There are going to be storms that come our way, and it does not mean that God does not care. And that's sometimes a hard reality to get ourselves to. People around us will ask the question of why do bad things happen to good people? Because they assume if bad things happen, means God doesn't care. Doesn't mean anything of the kind. These storms that come along bring with them, like it will for the disciples today, lessons to be learned. There are things that we can learn in the storm that we cannot learn in any other way. And if you think back at life, of the difficulties you may have gone through along the way, you probably, if you could choose on some of those, might have chosen an easier way to do it. But when you think about the lessons that have been learned, what it has done to make you the person that you are, then you start to realize that these storms don't mean he doesn't care. It means that storms come along. And he replied, "You have little faith. Why are you so afraid?" Why are you so afraid? Do you ever find yourself in a situation where the reasoning side of you knows it's going to be okay, but the fear side of you can't let go? You're in a place that you know it will be all right. I think of people in Oklahoma going through the tornadoes over and over again. As you're below ground in the shelter and you hear all those sounds going on above you, there's still this fear, and yet something within you should know, I'm below ground. I am in the one safe place that I can be in, and yet the fear gets to you. And what Jesus says here about faith is that faith can carry you through that storm. If there is no faith, these things that we deal with in life, it's easy to see why they should knock us off our feet. But Jesus knows something more than what we do. In Matthew 8 and verse 26, it says, "He got up and rebuked the winds and the waves, and it was completely calm." Or the way Mark puts it is, "He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, 'Quiet, be still.' Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm." This is a story we have read so many times. It is very easy to lose sight of this. But I keep trying to imagine for myself, what would it be like to be over on the coast here in Oregon on the stormiest day you've had over there and to see a man stand up and say, "Quiet, be still," and for all of it to just stop? I would imagine that's a story you would tell for a while if you saw it happen. I would imagine you would look to the people around you, blown away by what had happened. I would imagine some of us would be fearful of who is this? And then there'd be the one skeptical one in the crowd that says, "Well, that was quite a coincidence of timing that he was able to do it just like that." Jesus says, "Quiet, be still," and everything stopped. It was completely calm. Completely calm. Do you think, and it's interesting to me that you don't have a whole lot of occasions where you have Jesus talking not to people or not to God, but talking to some other something. And when he says, "Quiet, be still," or "Peace, be still," depending on the version you're reading, everything just stops. This is part of the Godhead that spoke all of this into existence. This is one who was there when God spoke, "Let there be light," and there was light. This is the one who was there when God, day after day, spoke creation into being. And now he says, over those same waters that he was there to create, "Peace, be still." Do you think that there is a storm in life that he cannot have power over? I don't. Now, I know it's easy to think that when we're talking about this kind of a story and not when we're in the midst of it. But he has the power to change things for each of us. He has the power to give us life that we could not have otherwise. And we see here that it's completely calm. And their reaction, the men were amazed, or if you read in one of the other Gospels, they were afraid. And like I said, probably some combination of those things for us too, if we're here to see this happen. They're amazed and afraid. Now, should they be at this point? No, because he's told them who he is. And so if you know he's God, he is the Son of God, he is God in the flesh here with them, then the fact that he could speak and these things can happen, you already know that. Oh, but to see it happen in front of you is a very, very different thing. And so they're amazed, and they ask, what kind of man is this? Even the winds and the waves obey him. What kind of man is this? He is like no other man who has ever walked the face of the earth. He is the way, the truth, the life. He is the bread of life. He is the vine, and we are the branches. He is the way to the Father. And we have a gift in the fact that we sit here this morning because we know that. We know that. I don't know that we live it out as well as we could every day, but we know who he is. And as much as we would like to see this moment where we're out on a boat and the storm is calmed, we know that this happened. So this morning, for us, what does all this mean? Now, I would like to say to you, but I know that I would just be saying it and it would just be words, that if we ask him to calm every storm today, that he would do that. I don't know about you, but I would imagine there are several of us in this room who have a storm brewing right now, and you would love for that thing to be calmed. Why does he choose to calm some and not others? Because he knows something that we don't know. He is the one who can be asleep on the cushion while the storm is going on. He has an insight. He has an awareness. He has a knowledge that is beyond anything that we can imagine. But he is capable of calming the storms. Now, part of our trouble is a lot of us never even ask. We try to solve it every other way possible. I try to think of if this whole thing unfolded today, and we have a fishing boat out there. I have a friend who went on one of these boats on the Sea of Galilee to take the tour. And they all got on the boat, and it's this very realistic-looking, old-looking fishing boat that's supposed to be what it would look like in that time period. And they all filed on there and got on. And then he heard the engine crank. And he said, that's not realistic. What's going on here? But it's easier to get out to the middle of the lake on that. I would imagine there would be a lot of people today, if this same scenario unfolded and they're out on the lake, that would look for a lot of more reasonable ways to fix the problem. Boating-wise, we should do this or this or this, or you see the storm coming, or you're not out there at that time of day, or now we've got all these great weather forecasting things. We would have all these different ways that we would try to fix the problem. And in our lives here as Christians, I think we do an awful lot of the same thing. Well, here's how I can fix the problem. Here's what I can do. We were reading in our elders' meeting last week, James chapter 5, where it talks about people being sick and asking an elder of the church to come and anoint them with oil. And we were discussing how infrequently we've seen anything like that happen. And yet there it is. What do we do with that? Well, we've got doctors and we've got pharmacies and we've got men who ignore all those things, all that stuff. And we're going to try to find any other way to fix the problem other than God. Troubles that come our way, we're going to try to find any way to fix those troubles. I'm going to get myself out of this mess because I got myself into it. And God says, peace be still. God says, whatever these storms are in life, I can handle them. Whatever it is that you are struggling with, bring it to me. My yoke is easy. My burden is light. Let me be a part of the solution. So whatever your storms are this morning, whether it's something within your spiritual life that you just feel like you're not as close to God as you would like to be, if you'd like to take him on in baptism, there's something you're dealing with that we can help, we can pray with you, whatever it might be, please come as we stand and sing.